You are listening to The Night Walk, an audio companion. For more than 65 years, the Night War has taught us what it takes to fight a war, and what war takes from those who fight. The story is legendary. Captain America, storming a Nazi work camp in a one-man mission to rescue hundreds of prisoners of war, including his best friend. Yet that rescue, and the brutal battle and march to friendly territory that followed, was Able Company's final trial in a crucible that began weeks earlier, at the horrific massacre of Hanafro. There, they faced insurmountable odds against Wehrmacht forces, bolstered by the fearsome troops of SS Forschendienst, also known as Hydra. Able Company was decimated during the battle, and during their harsh weeks of captivity, fewer than 24 men would survive long enough to make it to England, where they arrived at the beginning of December,
1943. Strangest and the oddest things appear, and what insane and silly things we do. Here is what I see before me, vividly and clear, as I recall it, you were in it too. I had the craziest dream last night. Yes, I did. Never dreamt it could be, yet there you were.
December 2nd. I think the only thing that keeps me believing any of this is real is Steve. I would never have put him here in my head. I'd never want him here when he could be back home, where he is supposed to fucking be. Instead of signing himself up like a piece of shit fucking idiot to be a goddamn science experiment. It is looking at the face of my friend in a body I do not recognize, and a uniform that I thought he was safe from. I think it is too late for me, but I cannot stand to watch what war will do to him. I can stand it for myself. This loss of myself that I think must be my soul or goodness or... that everything now feels empty, but I cannot watch it in him. I desperately do not want to watch. I cannot seem to get my thoughts in order at all. The last, I think it has been 7 days, the several days of marching and then debriefs and then flying to England, it is all happening like watching the fog on an early morning from the Brooklyn Bridge. My body is gone, and in one moment I'm here, and then in that room. And then in another moment at Hanafro, which is the most awful of them all. It feels like I cannot breathe enough. I keep seeing Harry's face, and how surprised he was, and then how terribly scared. If I think about it too much, my heart starts going horribly fast in my chest.
was heartbreak, I think. I feel like I may never breathe again for this heartbreak. December 3rd. This is what happened. Surrounded, more or less, and our only chance is covering fire. And we know there is some ammo with Tom Rowe and Ed Joyce, as they are plainly dead, and their MG is still okay. If we are going to get anyone out of there alive, we need it. Especially as Dietz is alone, man and his gun with Sullivan dead, and barely any ammo. I am to lay down covering fire, and Harry goes over the top. And I am everything still, except my trigger. He gets there, and I can hear him say, "Oh God," because I know Rowan and Ed are in pieces. And he is running back, and there is a shell that explodes. Feels like a man could live his entire life in the time that it takes for the shell to scream in and explode. I think I start running before it even does explode. He is gone so slowly, but so terribly fast. I close my eyes, and this is what I see, more even than what happened in the camp. He keeps trying to talk, but the blood and noise makes it impossible. There is no difference in his hands or my hands from all the blood. Lipsy and Frank are there. Lipsy screams in my face, "Get the ammo to Dietz." And then he and Adler are back. Harry is still alive. The sky is lit up like day. There are so many bombs. Dietz must get the gun going. And it doesn't jam, even with all of Harry's blood all over the rounds. Words are coming out of me that may not even be words at all. A chant or a prayer somehow, either to God or to Harry. All those many times I simply said the words for forgiveness in my life, but now I know what really desperately begging God is like. Nothing contrite or humble or holy about it at all. It is ferocious, vicious, so consuming that in that moment I might have sacrificed everything I ever knew or was if God could just make him all right somehow. But it did not work at all. Get back to Dietz, and Harry is dying, even though I am trying so hard to keep his guts in. The smell is awful. Even though we are still under fire, I cannot look anywhere except his face. Until his desperate fear flows away with what is left of his blood, and he is dead. Later, a letter did not go to my parents. Thank God the notice did not go to them. Aunt Curly would have been so crushingly afraid, I think. Letters were here waiting instead for me. Reading them is like reading some other guy's letters. Curly gone to sing in a Christmas pageant, and a postcard from some dame I cannot even recall, saying she's got my handkerchief still from when we went together. I wrote home that I was sorry for long delay, that it has been busy on the front, but all is well. I have so many letters of my own to write, but I try and I cannot get even a single word on the paper. I do not know how to say what is inside me, and even the letters that I wrote to Ellis and Ball and all the rest families seem like they are a strange artifact of another man's life. December 4th. I cannot seem to bear being alone, or to be with anyone at all, even Steve, who seems to be taken to his bars if the endless briefings he goes to are anything to judge by. If alone, then it is just a short jump to being back in that place. I think no man has ever felt more alone in his life than with his friends blown up and having to stare up at that mask afraid of what will happen to him next. Until then, I thought I knew the worst fear of my life, but I think it was not so bad because I was knowing it together with my men. And even if none of us said a word, we all knew. And if a man cried a little in his foxhole, no one said a word. That is how you know we were all the same, each man facing the same horror, and it less horrible for knowing you had a stand-up fellow on either side of you. All alone in all of this is the worst thing a man can face. I cannot bear being alone. Going down to the pub. If there is anything Harry and I learned since July, it is that a bit of whiskey will put it all out of mind for a while. Later. God help me. They told me I can go home. Home. But I can't. I cannot go home now. Not with Steve here. Not when he needs me at his back. This is all there is. What I wouldn't give to go home. To be home back before everything. Even if it meant I never knew Harry or Castellano or Joe Fortunato or poor Glenn Lipsey, Skip Adler and all of them. To be home before it all, for none of it to happen, but for all of us men to be home. But other than the fellas in the hospital, I have only one friend left in this world, and I cannot do anything but do my part somehow. I don't think that will make it worth it to my mom when she gets a gold star in her window, but it is the only choice I can make. I could not bear it otherwise. December 5th. Hot bath and decent food. I took two hot baths, one right after the other, and then a shave, not with a goddamn piece of shit razor nine other guys are using. In the mirror, I looked the same as before, maybe. Still banged up, but on the inside, it's something else. It is like if the East River is the Styx, maybe, or just everything awful. Death and fear, and on that table, I jumped off the bridge into it, and it feels like I am still falling, and cannot get my hands on anything at all. Steve has set his mind to going after the bastards. We are a motley bunch, these poor souls he has pulled together. A California Jap and a GI named Dugan, both from the 15th IR. Guess we must have fought with them in Sicily. Anyway, it seems the 3rd Infantry came along to Salerno after us after all. A frog, a Tommy, and a colored GI who must be the unluckiest cook to ever live. Anyway, I met all of them there as we were cellmates after they split the 107th apart, and apparently I have them to thank for my life. These are the ones who told Steve I was still alive. Steve has it in his head that we are to be a unit, like a sort of American Special Air Service unit. That is what he said. And I said, Steve, I don't know if you noticed, but I think Lord fucking Falsworth and the frog might take issue with that. He grinned as joyfully as I ever saw him. And frankly, it was shocking how truly happy he seemed. Everything is grand now. He has his friend alive and a beautiful dame and an outside that matches the inside. No idea at all that war is a thing that makes men killers, not heroes. But I can't say that to him. I cannot speak at all, it seems like. He has already spent enough time looking at me like he thinks I need a quack. Anyhow, they're not wasting any time. As soon as we all have a clean bill of health. Minus Steve, of course. Apparently he can't get sick now. What a strange time and place for God to answer that prayer. They are sending us to what his lordship calls a country house. Where I guess they figure we will do some training before going after the fucking bastards. I am tired as hell, but not quite as busted up as before, so I would rather get going and get it all over and done with. I have written a letter to Margaret, but I don't know if I can send it, as I can barely read it myself. My hand was shaking so badly when I wrote it. December 6th. Can't believe I missed Thanksgiving, and am only just now realizing. I imagine Ma and Curly made a couple of pies, and Ma probably took at least one down to Father Cleary, who no doubt has 20 other ladies bringing him pies as well. She also took one to the boarding house, I'm sure of it, as she never could resist somebody who looked like they needed some mothering. Letters say that Pop has been working around the clock and that all is well, so I hope they had money for turkey. But most of all, I hope it wasn't an empty house, and perhaps some other family came. Jack has enlisted, naturally, so he is away, and Ted will have shipped by now. And I cannot imagine how terribly sad Ma must be with just Curly at home and a couple of blue stars in her window, the world's worst imitation of us. I am mad as hell about Jack, even though we all knew it was coming. Never mind, Ma's got two boys already, and never mind there's about a million ways to do your part, but Jack went and enlisted in the goddamn Marines. Had enough stories secondhand from fellows with brothers and pals over there to know is god-awful. He couldn't have chosen the Navy, where at least he will stay on the boat? Thinking about Mrs. Rogers, too. I know Steve is, too, considering it was the 5th anniversary when we were marching back. 5 years. Her dying before Thanksgiving was always hard on everyone as she loved it, so. The years she accepted Ma's invitation to come to our apartment were so special. I remember me and Steve looking across the table, as delighted as two kids could be, that we got to have a whole day of nothing but eating and running wild with each other on a holiday. Of course, it was harder after 29. but even if the table got worse, it didn't seem that way to us. Every time I can remember, from maybe 8 years old until she was gone, Mrs. Rogers would say, "Thank you, God, for my darling, lovely Bucky," talking about me during grace. "I am so thankful for the second son you've given me, and that Winnie's willing to share him." Not even her own kid, and she believed that about me, like she really meant it, regardless of if I deserved it. Every so often I catch Steve drawing her from memory. He does these dark lines, traces over them again and again until the picture's ruined, because he's so afraid he'll get it wrong, and that one day he won't recall her face enough to draw it. "No chance, pal," I tell him every time. And he says thanks, and that's it. Thing is, I know he won't forget. But with everything this war takes out of a man, I can't help but be afraid I will. It doesn't seem like there should be room in a person for the kind of things I've seen and the good things, too. Already I find myself hitching her laugh for a wisecrack to my left, thinking, I can't wait to see what Harry says about that. And of course he isn't there anymore, and he never will be again. And what happened to him, those terrible few minutes, it already comes to mind faster than any of his thousand laughs do. Anyway, prayers I know keep going before and after you say 'em. That's something Father Cleary liked to say. And it doesn't seem right, Mrs. Rogers thanking God for me when I couldn't even keep her boy safe in Brooklyn, when I promised her I'd look after him and keep him safe, and instead he's in a war, or any of my friends safe, frankly. Or that she could call me lovely when I have now lost count of how many men I've seen die, in ways I think surely must shock even God. I know it's different. I was a boy. All runs together inside. December 7th. I just want to sleep. They have me in a room by myself, and I just want to sleep, but I cannot stand it by myself. I keep waking up, and I don't know where I am for the longest seconds or minutes or years of my life. God, I just want to sleep. December 8th. These Tommies have to be the biggest snobs that ever walked the earth. I cannot figure how an island full of fellows who happily drink their beer warm got to thinking they know better than the rest of us. Today, arrived at the country house, and I suppose I was imagining something like Libsy's cabin that he talked about constantly. Hell, I could draw a picture of the fucking thing by now. But this place is a goddamn palace. I never seen anything like it in my life, except maybe when me and Steve got ourselves kicked out of the plaza. And we pull up, and I swear to God, Fallsworth sighed like somebody kicked this cat and says, "This bloody rock pile again." Anyhow, we did not waste any time going straight into the field with a mess of fellows from all different places, including from Poland, I guess, who were here to teach us what to do behind the line. My idea is to call in a flying fortress or 100 and bomb the hell out of them, but I guess that is not an option. Issued standard rifles, and the minute I stripped mine and realized it did not have all the notches and marks as mine, I found myself suddenly as angry as I ever been in my life. It is not that my rifle is lost, of course, but it was rage I felt at all of this, and most especially these fucking crowds who are the reason we are all here, and the reason so many are not here. I was so angry that for a moment I could not quite breathe or see, and even now in writing about it I feel it in my chest, next to my heart, like the way sometimes on ships fires will break out, and all I can do is contain them and hope to reach home. That is how it feels, I think. I want to soldier on and do this job, which is to end something evil, and then go home. To say it like that is almost too big. It is better just to think of the next thing, which is to eat a meal, not spam, and to sleep for a couple of hours without getting shelled, and to find a smoke in your pocket you didn't know was there. But it is a fire burning in my chest to get them back for Harry and Glenn and Skip and so many. Get the crowds back for them and maybe somehow go live a good life that they never will get to have for themselves. December 12th. Jesus, Mary, and fucking Joseph. After another day of marching through the damn rain, I finally got Steve to admit he didn't even fucking go to regular basic training, and that his selection program was just a couple of weeks long. What in the hell kind of outfit is this fucking thing anyway? Steve knows about how to put on a sharp uniform. I had to fix his bars for him, punk. But they didn't even teach him to field strip a Springfield, for Christ's sake. It's like they're trying to get him killed. And now I got Fallsworth and fucking Dernier trying to tell me how the Brits do it or the goddamn free French do it. I have had enough of all these jokers. I don't give a fuck if we're supposed to be modeling our unit after the British commandos, and we're sure as shit not doing what the guys who fucking lost are doing. I said that, too, when the frog tried to sock me one. The little shrimp can try. But Steve got in the middle of it, and all I care about right now is teaching Steve some goddamn small arms tactics. He wasn't even sure how to fix his damn bayonet yesterday. Jesus Christ, the shit I get into. At least I know he can throw a punch. He always could do that pretty good. I just wish he wasn't so good at taking them. Got him too used to it. And more to the point, if all you got is a hammer, then every kraut looks like a nail, doesn't it? Goddamn shithead needs to diversify. December 15th. I thought the most tired I've ever been was on the march back from Asano. But fuck, these British bastards are as merciless as goddamn Jerry himself. We have been training now for days and days, and it is good for us and good for Steve to learn. But I don't see why training can't come with a hot meal every so often. I am hungry all the time. I already know how to be hungry. I don't need extra training for it. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Nearly missed my part earlier in an exercise in Hereford, because we were next to a butchery and I could see roasts and sausages inside. God help me, I might go AWOL just for that next time. Sarge, says Morda, one day I hope to find me a woman who looks at me like you were looking at those roasts. Me too, pal. And I said, Steve's already got us beat there, don't he? And you know Steve, of course, red as a fucking tomato in August, and he said, keep it civil, Sergeant. I don't think I've laughed that hard since me and Harry heard Rossi and his pals warbling their little song about me. I said, Sergeant? You calling me Sergeant now, Captain America, sir? Punk, I've been dragging your dumb ass out of trouble since before you knew how to spell trouble. Fact is, I still ain't sure if you can spell it. He got that look on his face like he's trying real hard to keep it together. Like he wasn't sure whether he ought to laugh or, hell, sock me one across the jaw. And he said, as prim as can be, I always was an excellent speller, Buck, and you know it. Nuts. Steve is going to be the death of me. December 18th. Her name is Joan M., with hair halfway to her ass when she unrolls it. Dark like an Italian girl's, but she's as pale as cream and tastes as good. Lips like a pair of strawberries. Which is what I said to Dugan, and he says with a wink, Army strawberries? The bastard. And her laugh. Didn't know people could still laugh like that at a time like this. Found her in the pub once we got back from maneuvers and got a 24-hour pass. Bought her a scotch to match her accent. She's a Wren, and that's all I remember, because we went back to her flat and fucked. She let me slip it in twice, and she had a good time too, of course, and made these little sounds, these little high-pitched sounds, like a bird, out of breath and singing at the same time. Holy hell, I had forgotten what sounds a woman makes. I'd forgotten that, but I remember all this other shit. Goddamn. Imagine somehow staying in that room with a dame like God made her, drowsy on my bed, worn out because of me and making those sounds in my ears. And fuck the rest. Dugan in particular.
Behind the scenes extras. Episode 5, Part 2.
I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams.
December 19th. Mail today. I suppose I was not that clever with my letter to Ma, as what Steve did has been in newsreels everywhere, and people are falling over themselves about it all. Poor Ma, though I know it is better that she found out after we escaped than if that notice had made it to her door. But her letter did make me feel just awful, and reading it made me think of all the guy's mothers who did not get to write. I am so terribly grateful to him. This is the letter. I am writing it here because, sure enough, Curly's did get ruined, and I want to keep it where hers was.
My beloved son, I know you do not tell me all that happens at the front. Sometimes, not even that you are on the front at all. Though I can read the newspapers well enough, and find on the maps where you are, and imagine what new horrors you are facing. Perhaps you think hearing the truth of it will somehow make me more afraid for you. But one day, when you are a father yourself, and you have your own son, you will know that to be a parent is to love, and to worry, and to cherish. And you are so dearly cherished. I don't know what of the story is true, only that my little Steve is somehow not at all little, and for once he was the one to pull you out of trouble. I am so terribly grateful to him. Your letters are what little I get of you, my darling, so please send them. Your loving mother.